Okay. As you might have seen from the WhatsApp message, thank you, Sammy. We are talking tonight about
finding intelligent life.
Intelligent life, or the the theological implications of extraterrestrial life. Now that title actually comes from an article by Rabbi Lamb, Rabbi Norman Lamb, who wrote about this, I want to say, in the 80s, maybe even in the 70s. This is already something that was on people's minds. They were putting men on the moon. What does that mean in terms of, like, what we could possibly find in the universe? And, of course, this question existed from the 1600s when they were starting to, use telescopes and discover other planets and realize that it's possible that humankind and Earth in general is not the center of the universe. That was a big discovery, right? That was something that upended religious assertions that had existed already. You know, the position of the church, for sure, was that man was the center of the universe, and therefore Earth, the sun revolved around Earth, and of course, what happened with Galileo? He was, at first, I think the history, correct me if I'm wrong, whatever, he was commissioned by the church originally, and then he was banned by the church. I don't know exactly.
It was a little wonky.
Okay.
A while ago, but I forgot it.
The Copernican revolution was quite the revolution. Okay, so the reason why we're doing this is that there's a couple of reasons. Number one is that in my Nachshir, I don't know why I'm pointing to you, but in my Nachshir, we're doing Shoftim, and you'd be surprised at how much the beginning of Shoftim, really the fifth chapter, the Song of Devorah, when they defeat Sisera, my Nach guys are just got past that. And I said in the beginning of the week, when we were going over that poem, that song, I said, actually, this has to do with aliens. And the guys are like, that's amazing. We should talk about that. I said, well, that's really more of a Mishmar Shir, because I really believe that Mishmar Shir should be like, you know, that kind of wacky, far out kind of stuff, literally, in this case. It's important to do something that has to do with the Parsha and something wacky and interesting to keep you going into Thursday night, you know, finish strong for the week, go into Shabbat. You guys are having the Shabbaton. It's like almost superfluous to do an extra shir going into a Shabbaton where, of course, you guys are going to be learning constantly the whole time with each other, and of course, yeah, I'm getting a lot of thumbs up. So the problem is that because we had decided, apparently, it was decided for me to do aliens, I was like, uh-oh, that has nothing to do with the Parsha. I really should save that for, I don't know, Bereshit or Noach, maybe, where you have, like, I don't know, maybe more
maybe
weird stuff.
Maybe the Ark was actually a spaceship, who knows?
You should know that the Migdal Bavel, according to Rabbi Yonatan Ivashitz, the Migdal Bavel, not Migdal Torah, Migdal Bavel, the tower that was built. Yes, the same like place, right?
So that means it has Migdal and Bavel, so it's good.
Very good. So the tower that they tried to build, right? Rashi understands as like they were trying to wage war against God and heaven or something. So Rabbi Yonatan Ivashitz says that no, what they were worried about is that another flood would happen. So they were trying to make a spaceship that would allow they were trying to build a tower from which they could launch a spaceship, because everybody knows that the air up there is so much thinner, and they would be able to get this spaceship to the moon, and they would never be affected by the rain and the floods of God. That was what they were trying to do, and God, of course, stymied their efforts.
This time it's the FAA.
Anyway, so it happens to be that there is a relationship to Parsha Noach, but maybe we would do Bereshit and the creation of man and what it means to like read that story. And
aliens? You create aliens.
Right, why are aliens implied in that story? Like, these are the issues. So turns out that we cleaned up all the chumashim also, but it turns out this is Parsha. It turns out that there is a connection to aliens.
Parsha.
Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Probably not, because
this
is mostly
a
joke.
Parsha is.
The beginning of the fifth Aliyah. Let's see if we can find it quickly over here. Which we're getting all these good curses.
Favorite.
Awesome stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So in the beginning of Perek Chavchet, it says, this is in the middle of Chamishi, of the fifth Aliyah. right after all of these, Arur, this person, you know, Arur, the cursed be, I always found it funny, like, cursed be the person who sleeps with, who does adultery. Like, everybody says, Amen! You know, okay, fine. So it's just like a funny scene to
Yay.
Imagine. Right, exactly. Like, cursed is the person who sleeps with the daughter of his mother. You know, like,
Woo!
Yeah, Amen! Yeah, cursed be that guy. Okay, so anyway. What? Yeah, apparently that's what it was. They're on two mountains, and like there was some real enthusiasm about incest. So anyway, in Chavchet it says, if you listen to my voice, says God, yeah, im shema tishma b'kol Hashem, Moshe speaking. If you listen to God's voice, alakacha, your God, lishmor la'asot kol mitzvotav, and you keep all of His commandments, asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, that I have commanded you today, unetancha Hashem alakacha, God will place you elyon above al kol goyei ha'aretz, all the nations of the land. So now, you could interpret that to mean, like in terms of importance or superiority, but you could also interpret it to mean that you'll be on an alien planet above, literally above all the other nations. Okay, well, it's all relative. Okay, fine.
Okay.
Anyway, plug to the parsha. Thank you very much. And while I was doing, I saw that, I was like, that explains the pasuk in Ashrei. This is another joke, kind of, not related to the parsha, but I realized it's Malchut Cha Malchut Kol Olamim. That when we're talking about God being the king, what is Kol Olamim? You have a kingship. What is it? Malchut Cha Malchut Kol Olamim. What does Kol Olamim mean?
All the worlds.
So,
the whole world.
If you want to talk about what it actually means, like, you know, pshat, it means forever and ever and ever,
or
right?
The multiverses.
But you can read it as God has kingship over all the worlds, meaning there's other worlds out there that God would have rulership over, meaning that there are beings there that He would, you know,
why
that would worship Him. What?
Why did He give?
Maybe the exact Torah that we have.
Rob, what if God gave the Torah to one nation on every planet, and then there's going to be a battle royale where we have to decide who's the best planet?
Gog and Magog, what do you think those guys
are?
Okay, anyway, so turns out, right? Okay, so the question that we're dealing with, one of the main questions, is does this, the idea that aliens exist somewhere out there, in the, I want to get a raise of hands, just kind of pull everybody, would it affect you negatively if like an alien touched down this planet and said, take me to your leader? Like, would it have a negative religious effect on you? Would you start to doubt the Torah because of that, or doubt
no,
that?
But I'm racist against
raise your hands. Your hand. Don't be scared. I don't think that there's any shame in it.
Dovey, you're so brave.
if it would give you a little bit of a doubt, or maybe a lot of doubt. Right. Anybody? Any raise of hands? So we're going to see that it's not even Kabbalistic, it's the Midrash. We'll see that soon.
I just haven't heard any religious source that said that.
That's true. It's true, but okay, fine. So we'll talk about why it sounds like there should be a problem. Let's start with Thomas Paine, as everybody does in the Yeshiva, right? We love Thomas Paine, no? He helped build America, guys. What, Thomas Paine?
Oh, I know some history.
He was like the philosophical underpinnings of the democratic system. Okay, anyway, so Thomas Paine in Age of Reason, which I think was published after he died, and it was the big revelation that he was actually a closet atheist, which was considered atheist.
Oh, so he believed in monkeys.
He writes like this. Thank God for that we can save some paper, save some trees by printing it real small. I believe in you guys that you're young, you have good eyes. After this year, good luck with that. But let's look at the quote. I think it's a fascinating one because he puts it in very stark terms. It says like this: though it is not a direct article of the Christian system that this world that we inhabit is the whole of the habitable creation, yet it is so worked up therewith from what is called the Mosaic account of creation, the story of Eve and the apple, and the counterpart of that story, the death of the Son of God. Ignore that for now. Thank you.
Ignore that part. Unnecessary.
Well, he's talking about, you know, in the Christian system, right, that to believe otherwise, that is to believe that God created a plurality of worlds, at least as numerous as what we call stars. Again, this is in the 1700s. People are thinking that, about these things. Can you believe in alien life? He says, if you're to believe in plurality of worlds, what we, at least as numerous as we call stars, meaning there are tons out there, renders the Christian system of faith at once little and ridiculous, and scatters it in the mind like feathers in the air. People knew how to write back then, you know? The two beliefs cannot be held together in the same mind, and he who thinks that he believes both has thought but little of either. Wow. Okay, so Thomas Paine has some strong words about those who are like, I'm a religious Christian or a religious Jew or someone who believes in the Bible, and yet I also believe in the possibility or in the probability, even plausibility, that's a great word, for alien life. Why does he say that? Because he says it renders the Christian system little and ridiculous. What does he mean by that?
It's the Christian system, not the Jewish system.
Okay, would that be different? Doesn't sound like
his reasoning for the Christian system is because of the biblical depiction of the creation of the world.
Yeah, so explain that. What about that?
So first of all, like, we can, you know, come to terms with his belief by saying, like, we don't necessarily believe in the same way that we don't necessarily take that literally.
So oh, okay. So we have a little bit easier time.
Then it's not necessarily.
Then maybe a Christian might. Okay. But hold on. What does he mean by the Adam, the Eve, and the apple? By the way, it's never an apple. Even Christians, I think, know it's not an apple.
Well, what is it?
But it's always depicted as an apple. Apple used to be the generic word for fruit. So it was easy to call something an apple if you didn't know what the fruit was. What?
Fig, wheat, grapes.
Oh, so what's the fruit? So it's a big machloka. Oh, it just says the pre. It just says the fruit.
Now, what's your posture?
If I like a pomegranate. I think a pomegranate's really
good. I think it's every single fruit combined.
But if, you know, on a Thursday night, I think it's important to emphasize Rabbi Meir's opinion, who says it's a grapevine that they ate from, because the biggest downfall to a man is
grapes.
Wine.
Alcohol.
Grapes, wine. And where else do we find drinking, getting drunk as causing downfall? Noah and another. And Lot, right? Three worlds destroyed, right? Through drinking. Who got shachted?
They got drunk on Purim, the two rabbis.
Oh, okay, fine. Rabbi and Rabbi Zera. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Rabbi and Rabbi says that didn't happen.
Yeah.
He says that he didn't actually kill him.
Okay, but a lot of people say that he did.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, he brought him back to life.
Rabbi Zera and Rabbi.
Anyway, okay, so we're trying to figure this out. What is his problem with the Bible and alien life? Yeah.
So the creation story makes it seem like there's only one Earth that's created with intelligent life. So, if God created multiple, like, you know, why? What's the reason for that?
Yes, right. You read the story of creation, and you're like, oh, that's all there is. That's all he created. There is nothing, and then there is something, meaning this world. The fact there are other planets, it doesn't mention that. Okay, fine. Like, they're just rocks floating in space, right? I mean, you had philosophers thinking that maybe they had some kind of purpose to them in possessing some kind of consciousness. Even the Rambam believed that there was in the outer spheres, these various planets, there was some kind of consciousness possessed by them. This is interesting. What's the response to Thomas Paine? Can we construct a theological response 300 years later about? Yeah.
I think it's not really such a strong question because the Torah was given to man on earth. So framing it in that framework of earth and man, but it could be it's not, the purpose isn't to talk about all of, like, science and like all existences of everything.
All right, so very nice.
Framing it in terms of man.
Exactly, meaning that the Torah doesn't have to tell you everything that's out there. It might sound like that, but okay, it's, you know, focused on man's creation. And it might have left out, it didn't mention anything about, I don't know, penguins. It doesn't mention that in the Torah, not even in the kosher section. Why not? Because the Jew reading that, or the Israelite reading that in the desert, would have no idea what you're talking about with penguins and kangaroos and wallabies and whatever. Yeah, you have a.
Can you say that Aris doesn't just mean Earth? Earth, it can mean any. It's talking about the creation of all planets.
Oh, so you're saying when it says that God created Shemayim Ba'aretz, let's say, that you know that when the actual land is created, you're saying that's the first pasuk. Bereishit bara Elokim et haShemayim ve'et haAretz. That's the creation of all the planets and all the worlds and all the possibilities. And it kind of like leaves that aside and then focuses on our planet when it starts talking about Shemayim and Aretz after that.
Right.
Okay, interesting.
What does Jesus dying have to like, or Jesus?
Yeah. So what do you think?
What's the problem?
I don't know. Let's get into Christian theology right now. That's what Mishmar is all about.
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
The answer is that if you believe that Jesus died for the sins of humanity and that he's the Son of God and he visited Earth and lived, was born, or yeah, in some way born and some way died as part of a cosmic event of forgiveness and reparation, you know, repairing the world. So how does that make sense if, like, he visited all the other planets and did that also?
Of course. No, there was a Jesus on each planet.
There was a Jesus on each planet?
Yeah.
What? Oh, okay, fine. You're getting into some interesting territory. You might be again. We'll see.
If it's bacteria on other lands, then it's like, they might not be intelligent enough.
Oh, okay. So now, we have a couple of things.
Like, anyway.
There might be intelligent life somewhere else, but maybe they never sin. Maybe they're just like perfect beings without Yetzirah or something. Okay. Number two, there might not be intelligent life. There might just be life. So maybe that doesn't contradict.
Jesus is there. Jesus here. Jesus is really everywhere.
Talked about by our rabbis in the last 1,000 years, interestingly enough.
Jesus?
But I just want to set up, I want to show you guys that actually it seems like the Gemara already talks about aliens. The Gemara talks about aliens, and as I said, it comes from Shoftim originally. So if you look at the Song of Devorah, the second source on the page, apparently the Gemara using this pasuk didn't feel like there was a theological problem of aliens, it sounds like. Maybe there's a different interpretation, but take a look. It says in the Shir Devorah in Shoftim, Hey Chaf Gimel, it says, if I can read it, Oru Meroz, cursed be Meroz, Amar Malach Hashem, says the Malach Hashem, Oru Aror Yoshveh, cursed be the inhabitants of Meroz. Hilo Baal Ezrat Hashem. They didn't come to the help of the Lord. They didn't come to fight this war against Sisera, this like local Middle Eastern, I guess ancient Near Eastern war. Ezrat Hashem Bigilvarim, to fight for God against these mighty people. So who is this? And why is Devorah saying they should be cursed? Who is this Meroz people? So the Gemara in Mori Katan, Tezayin Amad Aleph, says like this: Ika da Amre. Some say, Gavra Rabahava. It was one of these big chieftains, this big leader. Okay, fine.
It sounds like a bunch of non-Jews.
Maybe it could be a non-Jewish guy, or maybe it's a Jewish guy that he was supposed to come and help. Ika da Amre. Others say, Kochava Hava. It was a star. Obviously, no one can live on a star. So you can also read Kochav. The constellation itself should have come.
Or no, you know these constellations had like certain effects on the world.
Oh, like the zodiac.
Didn't it mention the?
But there's no zodiac called Meroz. But maybe.
Didn't it mention the?
I think the spirits do have influences on it.
That's true.
Didn't the other person mention the Mazalos though in the song?
I'm remembering.
This is excluded.
What? So it sounds like this is not part of the constellations. Okay, interesting.
Say anything about being a star. That's all I'm not understanding.
What? Meroz. It could be, according to the Gemara, it's either a person or it's referring to the inhabitants of a star. Now, obviously, no one can
get that from. That's like such a far out.
I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, it says in the Gemara, it says that if you look a few psukim before, a few verses previous, it says, Min shamayim nilchamu hakochavim. From the heavens, the stars fought. So normally you would read that as saying, like, poetically, that not just the war isn't just on earth, it's even in the heavens, right? It's even among the stars.
Or
but
Star
the
Wars.
Gemara is, exactly, is this, the Gemara, is here, the Igata Amre, the one one possibility is that there's literally a Star Wars happening, and they're supposed to help people out on Earth. They apparently visited Earth before.
Like Darth Vader's?
Maybe.
It says a star. It doesn't say people. I like
the now, a few years ago, I gave the sheer here, and I suggested that, you know, Mayrose is very similar to the name Mars. So maybe they were thinking of the planet Mars. And then someone went ballistic on me because he's like, Mars is a Roman name, a Roman god name, and that name would not have existed in the time of the name of Shoftim. Right. And I said, well, it doesn't matter because it's enough that it was would have been in the name that existed in the time of the Gemara. I don't know when this would have been written in the Gemara, but certainly yep. Mars would have been a planet, a name of a god and a planet already in Roman times, meaning in the time that the Gemara would have been reading that and saying, Mayrose, Mars. Oh,
but they also know that in Shoftim, Mars wasn't a name yet. So it couldn't have been referring to that.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, when we were talking about Agadata, it's enough that it has relevance to the people creating the Agadata. Now, the truth might be, there might be a principle underneath, and I don't know. I don't know what the significance of trying to place in the Shir Devorah a Star Wars, a literal, like, alien life that was supposed to come and help. I don't know what the significance of that, if we take it literally. There's probably some, I don't know, ask Rabbi Zering, there's probably some deeper meaning here. But for the purpose of the Agadata, it's enough that Chazal would have seen the relationship between Mayrose and Mars. I'm saying very short, in very short language, like a much longer conversation about how to read Agadata.
It's also Nevuah, though.
No, but I'm
saying... The Shir is Nevuah, so...
It doesn't predict the future at all. It only talks about the past.
No, but it could be naming something that hasn't been named
okay.
yet.
Cicero's mom's doing that.
Oh, could be... You're saying that maybe Devorah, through being a prophetess, was actually predicting the future name of the planet from Roman times. Okay, fine. Interesting. I mean, then it should have just been called Mars, because... why stop at Roman times? Maybe it should go all the way to American English or something like that.
Well, yeah. How do you spell
anyway,
the name?
So you see, Gemara apparently doesn't have a problem with the idea that on a star somewhere there are inhabitants and they should have been involved in our lives. Fascinating. Okay. Number two, another evidence that Chazal might have been thinking of alien life is you can find in Bereishit Rabbah. You see, Amar Rabbi Abahu Mikancha Kodesh Baruch Hu Hayabore Olamot Umachrivan. It says that our planet might not have been the only one that got created, even though there's no mention of other planets being created in the Bereishit story. The Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah Tet Bet didn't feel a problem saying that God created worlds and destroyed them. Bore Olamot, he created worlds, Umachrivan, he destroyed them again. At Shibara Et Elu, until he created the planet that we inhabit, Amar Din Hainayin Li, this is good for me. Yiton Lohinayin Li, the other stuff, that's not good for me. I didn't care about those. Meaning that God actually created those planets and destroyed them, meaning maybe he put alien life on those planets and destroyed them. This is often brought up in the discussion of dinosaurs and where that might be mentioned in the Rav Cook and others before him was the, I think, Rav Yisrael Lifshitz, one of the, I think he's the Tiferes Yisrael commentary on the Mishnah, and he actually posited that this might refer to dinosaurs, that God created worlds, meaning the inhabitants of this planet that existed and then ceased to exist and then created a new world with that would allow for human life to exist, which is an interesting possibility. Yeah.
It could be that it's not that, like, yeah, it's not he didn't actually destroy the worlds. He cleared them, like, he destroyed what was there. So it could be, like, the other planets in the solar system that's talking about that wasn't suitable for life on them, that when he put life there, it didn't actually...
God put life there and then destroyed that life?
Well, they didn't last. Say that there's, like, water on Mars and that.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, you have to ask why, why would there be alien life within Judaism? What would be the purpose of it? Another possibility, you could look in the Mishnah Uksin, is all the way at the end of it, 312. Gimel Yudbet. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Atid HaKadosh Baruch Hu lehanchil lechol tzadik v'tzadik shlosh meot v'asara olamot. In the future, God is going to give every tzadik 310 worlds. I don't know what that would mean. To own
like
310 worlds.
You know, it's like when you can buy a star.
You can buy a star, so they'll own 310 worlds. And it sounds like they'll, like, they'll actually go to them. I don't know. Shenamar, and this is a strange way of learning it out. It's also in Mishlei. Lahan chil oavei yesh, to bequeath to the ones who love him, yesh. How much is yesh? Gematria is 310. Okay, so.
Rabbi, I don't think it means that, because when we say worlds, I think they're referring to people. You know, like you say, if you save a person, if you save the entire world, like each person.
So does it mean that you're saying that they're going to have a slave trade?
Potentially. Yeah.
Wait, we can bring back slavery for the aliens, Rav.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's what it, Rav. That's what it means when the basement is going to come from Shemayim. Rav.
Were you saying that
that's what it means when the basement is going to come from Shemayim? So I'm going to send the aliens to bring down the basement for us.
That'd be nice. Now, a lot of these sources, by the way, Rabbi Ari Kaplan wrote an article called Extraterrestrial Life, and he brings a lot of these sources. The Gemara and Avodah Zarah, another source. The Gemara and Avodah Zarah talks about God traveling to various planets. Now, obviously, God doesn't literally travel in space.
I don't know, maybe he does, though.
No. Maybe he doesn't, or definitely he doesn't, right? I'll just read it in the English. I'll read it in the English. You can follow along with me. The Gemara asks, this is Steinsaltz translation, and during the 12 hours of the night, what does God do? Like, what does God do when it's dark out and I can't see anything, right?
The other half of the world.
We're all asleep, right? Who cares about the other side of the world? If you want, say, similar to what he does during the day. Maybe he's active just as much at night during the day. We know Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan, that God doesn't sleep, so it doesn't slumber. So obviously God is awake. We're trying to imagine, what does he do? Now again, this is in the Gadita. There's various ways to understand it. And if you want, meaning another possibility, is he rides on his light chariot, Karub Kal, and flies in 18,000 worlds. Awesome.
That sounds very.
As it's stated, the chariots of God are 20,000 even, meaning Shinan, thousands. That's in Tehillim. Do not read it as even, meaning Shinan. Rather, read it as She'enan.
Why?
That which are not.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. You can look into the Gemara there.
20,000 versus 18,000.
The point. Why?
Why did we need to lower the number?
Meaning, take away, I don't know. You have to figure it out. 310. All these numbers you have to figure out. I don't know. That's not my point. I'm just pointing out these sources indicate the existence, the possibility of the existence, and it wouldn't be far-fetched for the rabbis to talk about other worlds, inhabitants of other worlds, maybe. We mentioned before that one of the issues of the belief in alien life is the problem of the Torah indicates, and it sounds like religiously, it sounds like this should be the position, that man is central to the universe, that God created everything so that man could take advantage of it. And in the creation story, it says that Adam was created and he was able to dominate the fish and the animals of the everywhere, that everything else that existed. He's the top of the food chain. So what would it mean to find aliens on other planets that apparently were not the center of the universe?
Why would it not be the center of the universe?
Maybe apparently we're not the only purpose of creation if there's intelligent life on another planet.
Rav Sadia Gaon believed
that we are the center of the universe. His proof is very interesting. He says, the middle of things is the most structurally and positionally, or in terms of its superiority, the middle is always the strongest. The middle is always the best. He says, take a look, an egg, what's in the middle? The yolk, what's in the middle of a fruit?
The seed.
The seed or the nuts. The middle of something, where, what's in the, this is where Sadia Gaon says, I'm just going to Sadia Gaon, what's in the middle of the chest? The heart. The brain. Your nose. I don't know. The point being, he says, if you take a look at the hierarchy of the various creations, man is straight up in the middle. There's God and the angels, man, animals, and plant life. The human being ends up in the middle. So that means that we are the most, the purpose of the creation. We are the middle. That's exactly where we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to do. That's Rusadigon. And there are other medieval philosophers that also signed on to this. You can read the Kuzari and you get that feeling as well. Yeah.
Two questions. One, did he say we're the middle, like, Earth is the center of the universe, or he said, like, in terms of...
You have to look back there. I don't know specifically. I just brought it up because you were saying, okay. Is it so true? But there is a belief among Jews to read the Torah that way and have a philosophy like that.
Right, but knowing how vast the universe is today, which they didn't know back then,
that's true.
It seems that it's not as reasonable to believe that.
That's true. If you believe that we're literally the center of the universe, but that was most people's belief until the Copernican revolution, right?
Okay, so now that we know that's not true,
they're saying reject
the geocentric theory. Like, they thought everything revolved.
Yeah, but okay, fine.
But not only that.
That's in terms of the.
Saying how huge the universe is to say that it's all for humans.
That's true in terms of the physical center of the universe, but what about the purpose of the universe?
Right,
was man the purpose of the universe?
I'm saying if man was the purpose of the universe, seemingly, I'm not saying for sure, but seemingly the universe wouldn't need to be so huge to have humans. Seems like God have created a smaller universe. It was just humans.
We're going
to
see that. That's the critique of the Rambam. The Rambam says, before we got there, Ellie, it's not a joke. It's a good comment.
It's a good comment.
No question? Comment?
Question.
Okay.
So seeing as we are only 5,000 or so years into human history, and we're already... whereas the universe is 14... What was it? Trillion? I think trillion.
Billion.
14.5 billion.
Billion.
Okay.
Many.
Billion years old, and we're only 5,000 years into human history, or you know, since advancements have made it in human history.
There's a lot of assumptions here. Okay.
Well, no, the Bronze Age was 5,000 years.
I'm saying like naming things and where they start and stuff like what. Okay, fine. Continue. What's the question?
That's not.
What's the question?
Point is, we've made a lot of progress in a very small amount of time. And we still have billions of years of history left to record. So why,
if we're lucky,
why
do you know that we get billions of years more just because there already were billions of years?
Theoretically,
there are theoretically.
Okay, what's the question?
Why is it implausible to assume that we won't require everything that was made in the universe eventually?
That's true. We'll talk about that perhaps at the end. We'll talk about the possibility. Guys, we'll talk about the possibility of traveling to other planets and why there might be a use to that. Let's see.
Yeah.
Okay, so to your point, let's talk about the Rambam. The Rambam and the guy for the perplexed in the third Chelek, chapter 13, and he says like this. Sorry, it's a small text again. Here we go. It is likewise thought that the finality of all that exists is solely the existence of the human species, meaning the purpose of everything, the final purpose, is the human species, so that it should worship God, and that all that has been made for it alone, so that even the heavenly spheres only revolve in order to be useful to it and to bring into existence that which is necessary for it. He says some passages in the book of the prophets, if taken according to their external sense, give strong support to this thought. And he quotes a couple of psukim. You can look at those for why it would make sense to believe that we're the purpose of the universe. Okay. Now, if the spheres exist for the sake of men, look at the Rambam's critique of this. All the more is this the case for all the species of animals and of planets. However, if this opinion is carefully examined, right, if everything, not just the heavenly spheres, but everything that exists is all for men, if you think about that for a second, as opinions ought to be carefully examined by intelligent men, the flaw in it becomes clear, says the Rambam, this idea. This result is achieved through posing to him. How do you show somebody that there's a lot of fault in this position? Just show him, just ask him the following question. Who believes this opinion? The following question. The final end being the existence of man. Okay, fine. Let's grant that the purpose of everything is the existence of man. Is the creator able to bring him into existence without all these preliminaries? Meaning, all the other stuff that exists, could man have existed without a heaven? Like, just an earth?
No. Yeah.
Could men have existed without animals existing?
No.
Yeah.
No, we couldn't eat meat.
Evolution.
Okay, let's say, you know, we're talking about creating something out of nothing. Man could have popped into existence, though. If someone answers that this is possible and that, for instance, God was able to bring man into existence without there being a heaven, the following question may be posed. What is the utility for him of all these things, which are in themselves not the final end, but exist for the sake of the thing that could have existed without all? What would be the purpose of Mars and Jupiter and
one's mind, Rabbi.
The Andromeda galaxy?
Rabbi,
okay, so Eli has an answer. He says, hey, maybe we'll travel to those planets. I guess the Rambam never imagined that, okay? I think we could say that the Rambam was a smart man, but he didn't imagine that we were going to use the elements from those other planets and be able to, like, get water from them, I don't know, whatever, and be able to live on them.
Didn't the Rambam think that the celestial bodies, like, praised God?
Yeah.
So,
like, they had consciousness and stuff, yeah.
So then why is he, like, that requires him, like, questioning his own belief in a sense, like they weren't necessarily created for man, they were created for God.
He's saying, like, they can't be for the purpose of men, they must have their own individual purpose. That's actually his point.
Oh, okay, so, like, I don't
it
know.
Was the will of Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's what the Rambam says, or maybe even his wisdom, that's what he called it. Will or wisdom, okay, fine, anyway.
Okay, so then maybe only everything on earth was created for man.
Okay, but then what's the purpose of all the other stuff? That's what he wants. He's saying, if everything is for men, then why do those things exist? For this reason, to my mind, says the Rambam, the correct view is according to the beliefs of the law. A view that corresponds likewise to the speculative views, meaning philosophy agrees with this. What? No, I'm good. Thank you. Is as follows. It should not be believed that all the beings exist for the sake of the existence of men. So, boom. We do away with the problem of, well, isn't man the center of everything and the whole purpose of the universe? Apparently not, according to the Rambam, and he felt not according to philosophy either. And it was an easy way to, like, knock out that view. It's just like, well, then what's the purpose of everything? Okay, fine. So now that we've gotten past this problem a little bit of dealing with the theological issue of, well, what is our purpose? Aren't we the purpose of everything? Well, I should note, by the way, that the Rambam is truly a rationalist here, because in the Kabbalistic view, we're doing stuff by keeping the mitzvot and praying and thinking about God. We're actually, like, affecting the cosmic scheme of things. And we're, like, repairing the vessels, let's say, you know, the various metaphors that you might see. We're picking up the sparks and the shards and we're relating to Adam Kadmon. I don't know. I'm just throwing out words here. But the point is that there is an actual, like, direct connection between our actions and the cosmic drama that's going on. And if there's alien life, presumably, what does that have to do with the cosmic drama, right? Meaning,
they're
also part of the cosmic drama. And it turns out that even if this entire world, like, was in the messianic age, it wouldn't have helped, right? I don't know if we could say that. I don't know. It sounds like, when you talk about Tzimtzum, like, this is a very big Kabbalistic idea, the idea of that God contracted of himself to create the world, that presumably doesn't allow for other worlds. I guess it could. I guess we're talking about the universe.
God's, like, making himself smaller, he can make himself even smaller.
Exactly. Okay, fine. So let's just run through some sources, interesting stuff about various rabbis who talked about aliens, just because, like, it's interesting to see that Rishonim and Achronim were talking about this. So Rav Chasdai Kreskos in Or Hashem, I'll read, he goes through a couple of the opinions of things. Can we believe in aliens? He says, among the people who argue. However, the world was created, whether by desire or requirement. Why couldn't the desire or requirement include another world or worlds beyond this one? That's one argument. Among them, according to our explanation that the world was created at divine desire to provide good and favor, it is clear that the desire to provide good has no stinginess in adding worlds that would add to the provision of goodness. If we believe in a good God who wanted to create the world in some way, whatever that means, to want to create the world because he is good, so presumably he wants to create more good, right? Create more worlds. It is possible then that there could be many worlds among them. Multiplicity exists only in... Okay, this is a strange one, you're right? Multiplicity exists only in entities which are vulnerable to deterioration, right? Things can... It can only be... something can only be multiple if they can also be destroyed. It can also...
backups.
Like animals and plants. This indicates that multiplicity is only to preserve species, which is why non-deteriorating entities do not have multiplicity. So, like, the worlds, for Kastakrasis, or God, right? Okay. Since the world cannot deteriorate, this mandates that there be no multiplicity, meaning this is an argument against.
That's not
right?
True.
An argument against.
The world can...
right, but he was living hundreds
years ago. Okay.
Right, so now that we know better...
Another argument. The creator of all existence is one, in the purest sense, so it would be suitable for that which exists to be one. We want there to be only one world because God is only one.
I mean, there what? Are other planets.
The world is not God.
Stars.
Yeah, but you would say, like, I don't know. It's not a good argument, right? This is because of the accepted point that a pure one should only create a pure one. It also exists because the great perfection. I don't know.
You're just pulling ideas out.
He's running through.
This is logically intuitive as the geocentric theory.
Listen to this last paragraph on the net on page number 3.
No, it's not.
Since it is true that none of the reasons we presented, positive or negative, are sufficient grounds to determine the truth, and what they provide is only the possibility of multiplicity, right? Meaning, I don't know, I'm in doubt, I could hear arguments either way, it is appropriate that we not distance the lesson of some of our sages from Avodah Zarah 3b, which we saw, that he travels among 18,000 worlds, meaning that his supervision travels among these worlds. Obviously, he physically doesn't travel, but his hashgacha is among these 18,000 worlds, meaning to say that, or Kreska says, because I'm not sure, there's no reason to reject the Chazal that already talked about, that aliens exist.
Rabbi, 18, 5, light confirmed.
Why did he bring the Gemara of Meros?
Skipping what?
Why did he bring the Gemara of Meros?
That's interesting. I don't know. Maybe he does in a different point. I don't know. Let's see a couple of other possibilities here of how to deal with this. Say, according to the Sefer of Ris, he quotes the Sefer Yikarim. I was not able to find this in the Sefer Yikarim whatsoever. Reveal Sef Albo. I don't know. Maybe it's a different Sefer Yikarim. I'm not sure.
Not rowing,
but I tried mightily. Nothing. I tried mightily to find it. He says, according to this, is Rishon, a very important Rishon, Sefer Yikarim. We shouldn't say that there are other worlds. Ki achar she'ein b'hem ba'alei b'chira ve'enam havim nifsadim el kayamin b'ish ve'en b'hem Torah b'avoda. If we say that there's life on other worlds, then we have to say that there are like animalistic life that have no Torah and no avoda, no worship. We have no relationship to them at all.
Why can't there be?
Narehem kimosh shara bruim. They should just be like any other creation that exists out there. There's no way that God created aliens with free will.
Why not?
Because
there are humans with free will that don't worship God.
Because we have free will and we're special. We're unique. We're made B'Tselem Elohim. He doesn't flesh it out.
But B'Tselem Elohim.
Or not even B'Tselem Elohim.
He doesn't.
Hey, what's wrong with that?
You can be. You can have sentience. You can have
not even B'Tselem Elohim. Just dumb life.
Just dumb life, like a cow, something like that.
Or like
you can have rational, advanced life without having
what? Yeah, exactly. Could be. He says it could be. Maybe there is life on other planets, but I don't want to say that they have free will.
Animals don't have free will.
No.
No, they don't have free will. Right. Yeah. No, a dog. Yeah. Okay.
They're controlled by their instincts.
I think I can safely say it. Now, there's an interesting book that came out in the early 1700s, maybe it was the late 1600s. Rabbi David Nieto, or something translated that way, in the he wrote a new Kuzari in the style of the Kuzari, called Kuzari Hasheni. One of our students last year translated the first like two chapters of it, and it's on Safari.
Oh, Zach?
Was he?
No.
Zach?
No, Zach. Zach did.
He translated things into
Ladino. No, he didn't.
Sorry, not Ladino. Esperanto.
Yeah. No, I don't know if he did that, but he also translated into English. Okay.
Gross. Why?
Anyway, listen to what he says. I think it's very fascinating. Rabbi Meir echoes Matzah Tocho Achal Klipato Zarak. Okay, Rabbi Meir, when he learned from a very famous heretic. Who is the famous heretic? Acher, Elisha ben Avuya. When the other rabbis asked him, how can you learn from this guy? He said, oh, you know what I do? I get the fruit. I take away the chaff, the outer husk, the inedible part, I throw that away, the peel, and I take the good part. Meaning, I throw away the bad that he teaches me, the kafrus. That's not a word, right? Kafrus.
People use it all the time.
Yeah, but I just feel like if a sofer writes safrus,
this is a tangent. Get back on track.
Then a kofer should write kafrus.
Oh.
Okay, fine. Anyway, so... Okay, so anyway, Rabbi Meir would take the fruit and throw away the seed, throw away the shell. That's also appropriate for us, he says. Whenever we find the philosophy of the Gentiles, if it's against our Torah, Vatimima, our perfect Torah, Ben Shabbatah, Ben Shabbatah, whether it's against our Torah Shabbatah, whether it's against our Torah Shabbatah, Shaket Tishakzenu, we should cast it out as disgusting. Vitayat Ta'avenu, we should consider it an abomination. Kicherimu, it's completely off limits. Of Masha Enu Negativara, but if it's not against what we believe, and what was said in our Torah, below neged perusha, it's not against what is how it's explained by our rabbis. Harushut biyad kol ish Yisrael la'amin olima ein ba lefisuchlo. A thinking Jew should listen to the philosophy and the ideas of the Chachmei Umot Olam, the Gentiles, the wise Gentiles, and if it doesn't contradict our Torah, then if you want to believe it, great. If you don't want to believe it, you could also do that. And since there is no reason not to believe that there's stars, and he talks about the eighth sphere, I don't know, whatever, that they are planets, asher bahem mikol balei chayim, that they have animal or living life on them. There's no reason not to believe in something like that. It's not commented on, or it's not contradicted by our Torah. Ve'af shar shel zeh, it's possible even, kivanu razal, that Chazal even had this idea when they talked about the tzaddikim inheriting 310 worlds. Another person who only looks at one chazal and didn't pay attention to the Mo'ikata. Maybe the Mo'ikata one was just too weird. Okay. So he says there's no reason not to accept this. Another rabbi, you know, Achron, who's saying this. Rabbi Yehuda Barzilai, this is a commentary in Sefer Yetzirah.
Sefer Yetzirah.
This is an early commentary. He says, Yurchet Elef Olamot Shabara, right? Referring to the 18,000 worlds that God created that we saw in the Gemara. She'afshir Shazel Olam Chaviv Lefanav Yoter Mikol Shar Olamot. Maybe our planet is the one that God likes the most. Maybe our planet is the one that God likes the most. He says, maybe that ours is the most beloved one. Maybe he never gave the Torah to the other planets. This is in the 12th century, 1100s, right? He's talking about this. V'ulai avshar nami lomar, maybe you could say also, kibota na yudchet olamot, maybe in those 18,000 worlds, in mehem briot b'chet. Where's Rudy? Rudy suggested this before. Maybe in those planets they just never sinned. V'avon, they don't have sin and they don't have iniquity, kimo be'ela, like we do in ours. V'ulai otan abriot melachim ruchot, and maybe those are of a completely different life form than we are used to. Maybe it's not a physical life form. Maybe they're silicon-based. Like Ellie was about to say.
Maybe the Melacham, I meant the Melachim, maybe the angels they have.
That's what he says. Maybe it's a Melach kind of existence. Shebara Makum Lechvoda, that God would have created just for his own glory. Oh, like Krovim Lahem. Or maybe it's something similar to that. Maybe it's something similar to the angels, or it is the angels, or something like that. It could be just that God, they exist on other planets, but they have no Torah, or they don't even have the capability of sinning. So we run the gamut of all the possible beliefs of aliens, and the rabbis did not have a problem with it. Okay, I think it's fascinating. Okay. What about space travel to other worlds? I included a lot of English here. I'll say outside that Rabbi Kaplan says, hey, you know what? In the Messianic age, maybe we're going to be working on that. Who knows? Maybe we'll really, once we know that we have these Gemaras and talk about the Tzaddikim going to 310 planets, totally possible, right? That we'll build these ships that will go to other planets. Maybe Chazal were even thinking about the possibility of that.
It is monomorph, though.
What?
It is monomorph. Like, monomorph, Shabbos, days,
Oh, how does the halacha work? That's my little shtick. I say lo bashamayim. Thank you.
No halacha in space.
Halacha in space. That's what I believe. Not really. Okay.
I believe.
Usually it's wherever the last part of Earth that you came from is how you hold.
Which, really?
Yes. Like if you're on the International Space Station and you left off from Texas, you're supposed to hold by Texas time.
Actually, you leave from Florida.
Because until whatever. Okay.
All right.
All right, there's not clarification questions. I just wanted to point out very fascinating that Rav Cook, I have to mention Rav Cook, right?
Of course.
Rav Cook, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook, writing in the very early 1900s, meaning like 1902 or something like that, and he's trying to deal with the problem of, if we really believe in Tchira Metim, and he believes that a lot of people will actually come back from the dead, what do we do about overpopulation? Like, how will they survive on this planet? And he says, well, hold on. Tchira Metim, he predicts, will be a scientific discovery. He says, really? It won't. He predicts it being a very physical event.
How is it a miracle?
It can't be a miracle by being an amazing scientific discovery.
Oh, I thought he meant like scientists will figure out how to bring people back.
Yeah, that's what he means, right?
But like, in what sense?
I don't know if it has to. I don't know.
It could still be a miracle.
The discovery, the progress.
Wait, Rabbi, is it?
If there's a miracle that comes in a very convenient way, in a specific way that could only be divine, then that's...
Rabbi Ari Kaplan suggests that even if you can do Tchira Metim, how do you get people's personalities and memories back? That's, so that's the miraculous part, Rabbi Ari Kaplan suggests. He's not talking about Rav Kook, but Rav Kook doesn't get into that. But he says, listen, if Tchira Metim is going to happen, the same way that that's a scientific event of the century, of the millennia, that we're going to bring people back to life. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he's not thinking this, but, you know, DNA, you can take someone's DNA and clone them. Then why not have a discovery to get to other planets, and therefore we won't have a problem of overpopulation? I think he's the only one I've seen that suggests that a solution to overpopulation is to space travel. Just to end off the shir, I think that there might be a source for this idea. In the Messianic age, we're going to start doing space travel. Take a look at this Tanchuma. This Midrash Tanchuma Tzav Tezayin. It goes like this. In the world to come, this is a translation, in the world to come, the Holy One, blessed be He, will widen Jerusalem, as it states, and it will become wider as it wound about higher. This is from Yechezkel. That's a quote from Yechezkel. Until it rises to the heavens, right? God's going to expand Jerusalem until it is so expanded that it lifts up off the ground. I don't know what this means, right? Obviously on a physical level. And then it goes higher and higher. And now higher can only mean the heavens. Thus, the state of your kindness is greater, higher than the heavens. Eventually, in the Messianic age, in the time, in the world to come, Jerusalem will lift up off the ground. I think it's not so hard to say.
Aren't we allowed to determine where Israel is? Aren't we allowed to increase?
We can expand.
Expand, but
it wouldn't be Jerusalem. It would be all of Israel. Right?
I know. I'm saying hypothetically, Mars is Israel, or this part of Mars is Israel.
Interesting.
Places on Mars? Can we have
Listen,
fly out of San Andreas in the cave.
When you become. Anyway, so what we see is a fascinating journey, literally, into the understanding of Chazal and the Rishonim and Achronim, that there's a real possibility that they have thought through for thousands of years of the possibility of life on other planets. How they deal with that life is different, but I don't think it has. I'm kind of preaching to the choir. Didn't seem like anybody had any problems with the idea of alien life. And if aliens came down and said, take me to your leader, you guys would be perfectly fine with that and say, yeah, Judaism. But now you can be sure in your faith and say, this doesn't go against the Gemara. And it just goes against Thomas Paine. Woo! Go ahead, guys.